You know what? Talking about Sly Stone, he was as famous for his music as he was for not showing up, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was talking about this on the air earlier today, the famous 1970 concert that was supposed to happen in Grant Park. It was supposed to be a goodwill gesture from the old Mayor Daley to have those young kids performing at the Bandshell, the old Bandshell, not the Petrillo Bandshell, but the one that was further south in Grant Park. Sly was supposed to put on a concert. People started showing up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and there were thousands of people in Grant Park by about midday or so when Sly and the Family Stone did not show up for the concert. And other performers, you know, went on stage trying to, like, fill the bill, trying to find Sly, trying to get him to come out on the stage, and the crowd was not having it, and it turned into a huge riot in downtown Chicago. 160 people were arrested. Cops were hospitalized. Protesters, the concert goers were hospitalized. And not that uncommon for Sly to simply not show up for concerts. But, you know, before all of that, and unfortunately also a history of substance abuse, later in his career, which I guess he came back from. He did stage a comeback. But back in the day, man, nobody turned out better hits than Sly and the Family Stone. A little something like these.
Yeah, I remember he was sort of trying to make a comeback in the 80s, and he was actually working with a Chicago band, the One-Eyed Jacks, but not much came of that. A couple of good documentaries out about him. One, I don't think he even participated in, but it's kind of a story of a sad life, isn't it?
Ultimately, yes, it was, because while he busted, he and the band, the Family Stone, busted out of San Francisco in the late 60s, they rode high on the charts, really only until about like the mid 70s or so. And then after that, it was a very difficult time for the band. The documentary that I recommend is one that Questlove put together. Questlove won an Academy Award for the documentary that he did a few years ago, the Summer of Love documentary. The one about Sly is called Sly Lives, and it is streaming on Hulu and on Disney Plus right now if you want to get the real deal story about Sly Stone, Sylvester Stone.
Yeah, actually, he got the name Sly because a teacher mistakenly spelled his name instead of Sylvester, like Slyvester, S-L-Y. So then everybody just started calling him Sly.
I've been calling him Sylvester Stallone on the air all morning, and people are like, did Rocky die?
No.
Rocky Balboa die? No.
No,
it's Sly Stone, Sylvester Stone. He was 82 years old. Apparently had suffered from COPD for the past couple of years.
Dean, I have to admit, as many times as I have heard reports on this Justin Baldoni lawsuit, I just kind of glaze over. I don't know if I could even tell you what it's about anymore.
Yeah, I did. I glazed over. I was interested early on when it was two co-stars from one movie. One was suing the other for sexual harassment and sexual intimidation, and then the other one countersued with claims of defamation and extortion. The Justin Baldoni part of the lawsuit has been dismissed by a judge yesterday. She sued him for sexual harassment and retaliation when they were making the movie It Ends With Us. He sued her for the defamation and extortion. But yesterday the judge ruled that Baldoni cannot sue Lively for defamation over claims that she made in her lawsuit because allegations made in a lawsuit are exempt from libel claims. which I did not know. And, you know, back just to circle the wagons, I still don't understand it.
Yeah, that makes two of us. Yeah,
and don't care, by the way, either.
Yeah, exactly. What's the story on How to Train Your Dragon?
Well, there have been three How to Train Your Dragon movies, all animated so far, all extremely successful. This is a very popular franchise, but now they are doing the live-action adaptation like so many Disney movies have, where they take actual human actors and they interact, in this case, with computer-generated dragons. I saw the movie. It actually works. I actually enjoyed this movie. I'll tell you much more when I review it on Friday, but in the meantime, I talked with the cast of the movie in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. Among them, Gerard Butler, who has been in all the Dragon movies as the voice of King Stoic in the movie, and now he brings it to real life. One of the things that I discussed with him, comparing then to now.
Weirdly, it allowed my voice, I felt, to be a lot more dynamic, because when you're doing the voice in the studio, you only have that moment, so you're kind of, I'll give the best, but in a way, the most poignant, powerful moment.
Yeah.
When you're really there living, you can give so many more colors and trust that people are seeing and feeling everything that he's going through.
The sets add something to it, right? The costuming, the environment, everything adds to the performance, right?
Yes, I was very lucky, I think. The second I stepped onto those sets, I was like, really? I get to do this? And one is, me as a kid, interacting with that, it was fun. But also, knowing that it allowed me to just completely transport myself into another world the same way that an audience would. I mean, these sets were incredible.
I wonder if you had any apprehension about going into this. Live-action adaptations are put under such a microscope, beyond a microscope. I wonder if you were like, I want to leave well enough alone.
I would be lying if I say it didn't cross my mind, but that's never been my way as a person. You know, I take on roles like Phantom of the Opera or 300. Many roles like that where, you know, there's already gossip going on. People want to open their mouths and say stuff. That's none of my business. You know, to me, I'm in. I want to make an amazing film. And then the secret is in saying that I know that chat goes on. It's fun to see those people, because I've experienced a few of them who've watched the movie, who've come out going, like, you can't watch this movie and still be concerned with, you know, oh, well, this should have, I think you're overpowered by the story, the emotion, the artistry, you know, you're really in another world.
Yeah, I could just sit and listen to his accent all day.
That's nice.
I love that. The movie opens on Friday, by the way.
Took your advice and saw Mission Impossible on an IMAX screen.
Oh,
and
nice.
You know what? I'm glad I did. And the sound is also spectacular. Yep. I have to admit, though, the first hour or so, I was a little confused. I wasn't sure what was going on, but it really didn't make any difference. And then that last hour of the movie
is crazy.
Is pretty wild. I mean, yeah. I think everybody leaves the theater and they get in their cars and they want to drive like 100 miles an hour with their head out the window.
Yeah, I haven't talked to really anybody. I'm sure there are some, but, you know, normally after I give my review, I start to hear from people who have seen it and they agree or they disagree. Mm-hmm. Everybody has uniformly said that they absolutely love this movie. They pretty much said what you said, but they enjoyed in the first half of the movie all of the flashback footage from all the previous Mission Impossible movies that you know, helped kind of fill in some of the history on this. If you haven't seen them all, you really don't need to. But it's one of the better ones out there right now. We've got some decent movies and some pretty decent ones that are coming up in the next few weeks too.
And the very end of the movie is actually quiet, and I kind of like that. It's very thoughtful after that roller coaster ride. So
I wonder if, you know, who knows if this is going to be the last Mission Impossible movie. It's making so much money, I can't believe that they're going to stop it, but we'll see. But you know what I would think would be really interesting to see? Tom Cruise, who we now know for these Mission Impossible movies and Top Gun and all these big-time action movies to go back to just like a straight drama, straight quiet drama, maybe a comedy, you know, something like that. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, it'd be smart because you can't top the action in this movie.
That would be the really dangerous stunt for him.
I want to see the documentary on how they made the movie, Mission Impossible.
There's plenty of behind-the-scenes footage. I'll send you some links.
Please.
I've got some footage of how they did that biplane, how he goes from one biplane to the other in midair. Like 150 miles an hour, something like that. It's crazy.
I mean, crazy. You see the credits, and you should stay and see the credits because the digital effects people, there must have been 500. I'd like to see how they did some of the effects where Tom Cruise wasn't really doing something. Yeah. I know that there's some of that. So.
Yeah, yep.
All right, let's have a screening, please.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Dean. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.